The Naive Theater of the Air presents Rewired by Matthew Broyles. Episode 24, The Queen.
Across the Western Hemisphere, the Earth made its slow progression to the February night. In the stratosphere, a thick mass of cold air hovered sluggishly over the central latitudes of the North American continent. Snow fluttered down onto the stoop of a townhouse near DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. Through the warm light within, the silhouette of a woman could be seen against the drawn blinds, pacing, pounding, speaking aloud to the room fitfully. Outside, a black limousine idled. Further north, in Brooklyn, the previous day's snow hardened into icy reefs, encrusting all surfaces from which it had not been cleared. It did not stick to the gleaming transmetal monolith of the Brooklyn Defense Force headquarters, but gathered and froze in sharp crags at its base, as if holding the immense building in place. From an office window near its top, the outline of a suited figure could be seen staring out onto the crowd, swelling to fill the spaces between the stone and concrete structures below. The man in the window stood perfectly still, waiting. To the west, across the Great Lakes, winter's grip enfolded crumbling shanties. The biting wind searched out pores in the wood and concrete skin, separating those huddled within from the suffering that waited outside. In a converted church, a tall woman knelt and prayed before an altar which no longer contained any physical sign of its previous stone occupant. It was not important to her who the shrine belonged to. The one she prayed to was in Texas. Aeolian, in all its history, had never contained so many people. Across the plains they came, in vans and trucks, fitted with campers and trailers. Where the roads were blocked by military checkpoints, the travelers easily pushed aside the rusty barbed wire and rotted fence posts along the way, making tracks across the scrubby tundra. The destination grew brighter and easier to find, as more of the pilgrims set up camp as close to the army perimeter as they would be allowed. Past the tanks, transports, and mobile command centers, a nondescript, low building could just be made out on the horizon. Many of the first arrivals had been living nearby for their entire lives and could not believe the news. Some still did not believe it, and this was why they had come. To discover if the central sacrifice in the diaspora's creation, the murder of Dr. Waylon Lilly, had in fact been a ruse. And if it had, to hear what he would say to them about the strange mystery that had hovered at the edge of Rewired social stability for 28 years. A mystery whose answer would determine everything, the future of the Republic, the diaspora at large, and perhaps even of humanity. They gathered, braving the cold, some offering fried pies and coffee to the soldiers, who maintained a cautious goodwill towards those they had sworn to protect, both inside and outside the perimeter. Most of them did not know precisely what was transpiring within the walls of the compound, and were as anxious as the travelers to find out what details they could. In this vacuum of knowledge, there were fractures amongst those gathered in the frigid encampments. Those with VEF sympathies did not trust Colonel Haley's inclination to keep them all at arm's length. Others spoke of seers more powerful than any ever witnessed, who would deliver the truth no matter what the obstacle, human or otherwise. Arguments were spoken briefly, then muted into vague, invisible walls between clusters of people. At every camp, mobile net connections struggled against interference generated by the military comm units. Information flowed viscously like syrup through a straw. The Rewired net was alive, more than it had ever been. It was hard to know where to look and who to trust. Theories and purported inside information flooded every nook of the network. All ears waited for one voice. Little did they guess that the mind to whom that voice belonged was not at peace, neither with the world nor with itself. As if to prove Einstein's equation, time moved infinitely more slowly inside Dr. Waylon Lilly's head than outside of it. But the more quickly thoughts within his head spun, the more difficult it was to see them clearly. It would take a significant obstacle to slow them down. Two, to be precise. And now here they were.
Tap beam configured. Our signal is on mute, awaiting broadcast orders.
He spoke to the room at large, rather than to the tightly strung Colonel Haley seated mere feet away. Dr. Lilly paced, avoiding the Colonel's smoldering eyes, fiddling absently with his lapel microphone. Dr. Vinson was confined to the observation room with Dr. Dalal. Harry and Nina stood facing Lars as the old soldier withheld all commentary he clearly had to offer regarding the situation. Across the room, towards the kitchen door, Harry caught the eye of Lieutenant Graham, still and poised as a bear trap. She communicated with him silently and without motion. He nodded, as if in response, then turned his attention to the only moving thing in the room, who abruptly stopped pacing.
As before, no one speaks to the subjects except me. That goes for the tight beam signal as well. I am the sole point of contact in both these exchanges until otherwise indicated.
Harry tensed. Quickly, he reached over and took Nina's hand. She squeezed his in response, her body otherwise still and focused on the doctor. Harry looked again at his father, tied like a wild animal to the chair. He met his dad's fiery gaze and knew the blaze concealed a yawning abyss of fear. Harry tried very hard not to freak out.
We're ready to broadcast.
The colonel reluctantly nodded to the comtech, and from speakers built into the overhead ceiling tiles, a faint static emanated. Powered by animal instinct, all eyes rose towards the sound, as if they could see the faces that were about to speak. The people whom Dr. Lilly now addressed.
Crisis League, sound off.
Dear God, how I hoped I would never hear that phrase again.
That's one.
I wouldn't have missed it.
The time has come to address this unfinished scientific business. I'm confident that by now you've both reviewed all the shared data broadcast via the HPL transmissions.
I wouldn't use the word shared, but yes. The Lovecraft bit was clever, by the way. Copyright Emmett Stone, I presume?
I have additional data. A short time ago, Subject QVI, who has been described as a superseer...
Greetings, Sergeant Selden. Excellent to be working with you again.
Go to hell, Barrett.
You are consistent, James. I would never deny you that.
The Sergeant inadvertently came into close physical proximity with Subject QVJ, Danina Golding, who has been described as a super source.
A rare find indeed. Miss Golding, I send regards from your friend, Miss Gladstone.
Nina blinked. The old lady, Penny, the only other person in the ward, or as far as she knew, in the world, with symptoms approaching the severity of her own. Her stomach tumbled as she thought about what sorts of things Barrett might have been doing to her over the past few days. But remembering her own experience from a few hours ago, she comforted herself with the thought that Penny was probably no more confused than she. Seeing Dr. Lilly's grim expression, Nina did not respond aloud.
Moments after this, proximity was reached. Both subjects entered a trance state. Dr. Vinson, observing Ms. Golding's hand motions, deduced a desire to communicate and provided the necessary writing implements.
Lilly went on to describe the list of satellites and surnames, noticeably leaving out any mention of specific surnames, and gave a thorough account of his interaction with Nina and her written responses. He paused for a moment before continuing.
Unfortunately, the ODA was not engaged at the time these events took place.
A pity.
Lilly fought the urge to eviscerate the old bastard. Barrett's booby trap was the whole reason for this conference. Lilly took a small measure of comfort in knowing that Neidhart always put Barrett ill at ease, opaque though his emotions were at present.
I would be very interested to hear your analysis of this exchange and any data that might shed some light on its meaning or nature.
Apart from the obvious conclusion?
Consistency is a trait we obviously share.
You left the boogeyman in there, Waylon. After your disapproval of the results from James and my procedures, you went whacking through the weeds in the other direction. If you'd kept going...
I shudder to think.
Waylon, you built a house in the Black Forest of Fear, and now you're surprised when the ghosts come knocking? You stopped at the wrong place.
And how do we know where to stop? How far do we go before what we have left is no longer human?
Apparently, we just pick a random spot on the map and call it freedom. In truth, none of us here is human.
Harry wrinkled at the notion. It was the advent of life casting that had turned humans into slaves. The life cast was the logical endgame of total psychology, which was aimed squarely at the average human. It bore consideration, he had to admit.
We don't have time for philosophical pedantry. We need to know how two rewired people can enter a simultaneous trance state upon entering physical proximity, and how one of them can access HBL broadcast data with no previous exposure.
You've made at least two assumptions there that cannot be verified. You're going to trust James and his assistant's words that this information was not implanted?
Sowing those seeds. Waylon and I will not be set against one another by someone whose allegiances can be purchased for pennies on the dollar.
For the sake of argument, let us eliminate that possibility. What other explanations present themselves?
For one, a VEF setup. Both of these subjects were delivered under the care of the Vorn Elimination Front. Perhaps this is exactly what they were instructed to do.
That's a dangerous thought, Gabriella. Considering who's been seen consorting with them en route.
Call it professional curiosity. And, I must say, it did turn up some very interesting results.
Look, I invited you both into this conference because I believed your analysis would add significant perspective on the matter.
And perspective is what I'm giving you. You want the answer to be arcane and mysterious, when in fact the likelihood is that things are exactly as they seem, and you've been played for a dupe by the VEF.
Harry felt Nina's hand squeeze his vigorously. He felt indignation coursing through her blood, flushing her skin with rage. He patted her arm, a reminder to let things run their course. They were here for answers, not revenge.
However, perhaps there is a way that we can know for sure.
What do you propose?
Well, for starters, you might want to disable the broadcast hack embedded into Sergeant Seldon's visual cortex. That's a pretty big variable.
We've done that. It was easy to spot on the scope. We'd have caught it a moment after the first few images if...
He trailed off, feeling Haley's eyes on him. This wasn't just Gabriella he was sharing information with. It was the entire United States government, who didn't need to know that his lab had been forced into a shutdown.
Then our first steps are simple. Turn on the ODA and remove the dampener.
Lily tensed. Whatever he had been set up for was set to spring. He hoped the image broadcast was the only trap that lay in store, but he knew damned well that it probably wasn't. Haley's people were monitoring the net to make sure the audio from this exchange wasn't being leaked live, although it was likely that nothing would appear publicly until it had been edited to the satisfaction of the various stakeholders in the conversation.
Wait, can we clarify something first?
If eyeballs had lasers, Harry would have been blasted to smithereens from all sides. Lily strode over to him, a threat burning its way out through his furrowed eyebrows.
Hello, Harry, I'm impressed. I didn't expect you to make it.
If I'm hearing this correctly, you and Barrett are... prototypes?
We're not in Biopsych 101 here. I can walk you through this later.
He has a point, you know, Waylon. The phenomenon is consistent because the standard model of rewiring is based upon the final template, which, incidentally, is not any of the Austin team members' profiles, not even yours.
Every innovation requires testing, and rather than risk the brains of innocent grad students, we elected to choose subjects from within the lab.
You're all fucking science experiments.
Technically, only one of us is a fucking science experiment.
Oh, don't be modest, James. Surely you've managed to get laid at least once in the past 28 years.
Lily sighed, shaking his head. This was going pretty much the way he'd predicted, unfortunately.
Yes, Harry, I was the first, followed shortly by Dr. Barrett. After a period of observation, Dr. Lily decided that the traits accentuated by the rerouted neural pathways were not to his liking.
Harry considered what he knew about Neidhart and Barrett. Both avaricious, but in different ways, each according to their natural attributes. It had never occurred to him that the intensity of their will to power could have been accidentally heightened in the course of experimentation. In that light, his mind boggled at what other mistakes could have been made. His eyes strayed to his father.
A different path was chosen, through neural pathways which seemed to show more stability.
Ironic. Talk of stability from the architect of the diaspora.
Stability, not obedience. I know how terrified you are of people making their own decisions.
Waylon, what terrifies me is how many people's lives you are willing to destroy in order to protect your tenuous utopia. Those of us who live outside your bonfire of anarchy are presently enjoying the most peaceful, stable society in human history.
Thanks to the whims of your unelected autocrats.
Starvation, unemployment, crime, all but extinguished by the wire. Wrongful imprisonment is a thing of the past.
You're smarter than that. The truth is dictated by the wire, and the wire is owned by people just like us.
Not like us, Waylon. Stable people. People who value order and happiness over chaos and unpredictability.
The quest for order, a favorite value held by all tyrants.
Tyrants enforce their worldview on others. How precisely are you different?
I want people to think for themselves, not for me.
But within your parameters, your idea of what constitutes freedom. We may as well banish vaccination as well, leave everyone's future completely to the will of the elements. You see, Waylon, that's what you never did. Follow your thoughts through to their logical conclusions. Humans have been setting parameters for each other's behavior since time immemorial for the good of society.
Like Jim Crow.
Undone because of improved social norms enforced legally. Now we can make such changes without bloodshed. How many died during your reclamation?
That wasn't mine.
But it was. The reclamation could never have happened without you and your insistence on bringing rewiring to the masses. Had we kept to our original plans...
Your plans! So the entire world would be dangling at the end of your master's puppet strings. You do their dance, Gabriella, while they find you useful.
The pair of you, bestriding your tiny sliver of the globe, will not plunge this planet into the Dark Ages.
It already has been. The fact that none of them realize it does not change the fact that your plague infects them all.
Have you ever been to East St. Louis, Dr. Neihardt?
I can't say I have. I only make trips out of town for special occasions.
You should go sometime and see the dark side of your utopia, the one you choose to ignore.
Like Free Detroit? Certainly, even in your limited experience, you've deduced that not all people are created equal. Our efforts at accommodating society's dregs are far more admirable than any the diaspora has conceived.
Free Detroit is a cage. A dumping ground for your undesirables.
I see you've been drinking from the memory draft of Mrs. Savine, a potent brew, thick with the blood of her victims.
If I may, none of this is remotely germane to the topic at hand. Harry, shut up and let the adults talk.
Adult? My son has been talking more sense than any of you supposed experts.
Harry turned and regarded his father in bewilderment, as did everyone else. The old man's tone was steadier and clearer than Harry had ever heard it.
I've spent the last 28 years looking for answers to the question of why I shot an innocent man dead. All along the way, I've met some other seers. And the thing we all have in common is fear. If that's the direction Dr. Lily's design went intentionally, we need to consider that.
What you have just demonstrated, Sergeant Selden, is classic selection bias. Yes, the VEF have their seers, but so do the disciples. And they are not in the least afraid of what they see.
Suddenly, Lily was struck by the gruesome memory of Clifton, his limp body hanging from a cord in the guest quarters mere weeks ago. There was fear there, too. As in many religions, he thought. A desperate desire not to be rejected by something greater than oneself. Something tangible. Something visible.
Dr. Dalal, activate Selden's ODA.
Wait. All we're going to see is the problem, not the solution.
The problem is not the Vorn phenomenon. The problem is that people believe they know what it is. That is what we're here to correct.
Harry's emotions scattered. He had a vague sense that somewhere in this secret history of the tortured tunneling in these scientists' brains, there was an answer to the problem. One that addressed the essential nature of the phenomenon and didn't depend on interpreting the effects of the malfunction. Or perhaps, it occurred to him, he was afraid that after he saw what his father had described earlier, he would no longer consider it a malfunction. He felt Nina's arm gently touch his. Looking down into her soft face, he felt her mixture of resignation and confidence. "Let's get this over with," she told him silently. With great reluctance, he nodded and backed away. A switch was flipped. Behind Harry's father, the large screen lit up, a live image of the room from the old man's eyes. A room presently devoid of any small gray wraiths. Lily approached the sergeant, slowly removing the dampening amulet from his neck as before, carrying it over to the lab table. Popping the back open, he ejected the battery. The screen was flooded with light. Harry watched Lars slip immediately into the slackened trance state he had witnessed earlier. As the old man's eyes adjusted to the massive influx of luminosity, visible only to him, a form became discernible, slowly gaining focus on the screen. Sharp breaths issued from all assembled. This was nothing any of them had ever seen before. Silently, with preternatural grace, a thin, willowy figure hovered at Nina's right arm. True to Lars's description, it emanated a powerful glow, bearing wings which moved at barely perceptible speed through whatever dimensions they were theoretically treading. It was taller than a normal Vorn, a head shorter than Nina, but its feet did not touch the ground as it regarded the old man with an alien expression that somehow approximated curiosity. There were other Vorn throughout the room, but they were not perched on human shoulders. Instead, they gathered around the larger one, their hands oddly busy in some gesture whose meaning was opaque to the human onlookers. Their customary fanged expression was unchanged. Nina was frozen in place again, her hand twitching where Dr. Lily gripped her arm. After recovering from the initial shock of the image, he retrieved pen and paper from his lab coat and placed them in her hand, backing slightly away.
Both subjects are now in the trance state. Vorn appearance is as previously described by Sergeant Selden. As before, no one but me is to communicate with either subject or make any sound whatsoever until otherwise instructed.
Harry responded with his best attempt at a reassuring nod, returning his attention to the screen. The Vorn remained still, even as Nina scribbled furiously. The intense glare from Nina's eyes, now seen under full lighting, sent a wave of terror through his nerves. She was not herself. He did not know who or what she was. Dr. Lily walked into the path of those scorching eyes, taking up position between the two subjects. A little off to the side, providing them with a clear view of each other, and close enough for him to read her writing, he gestured to the comm technician, who approached Nina's side holding a small transmitter. The tech would send the shorthand transcription of Nina's writing through the audio type beam, allowing the other doctors real-time data. Presently, she was writing surnames again, which under Lily's orders were not transmitted.
You say you are the dream. If your window closes, will what we describe as dreams survive?
An odd question, Harry thought. But then, everything about the situation was odd. Nina's list of surnames stopped. She paused, then began writing again.
You exist and unexist always. The dream. You are alive in ways you cannot see. You say that when you die, you are gone forever after. But forever does not have an after. All that exists and unexists will always exist and unexist.
But not along every path. Manifold paths issue, you said.
The dream. You are what you are because of what you cannot see. We are the same.
So there are limits to how far you can see.
The dream. You behave as you do because you cannot see forever. You continue to search for the hidden room. You believe finding it will make you see. But you are what you are because you cannot see.
Then why speak to us now?
We speak to you always. It is now that you can hear.
You said that we exist and unexist always, but you can't see down all paths.
The manifold paths exist of themselves. They exist and unexist always.
So you don't know what's going to happen to us along this path?
This planet, it spins cold and dark through a galaxy with no suns. It also burns with the fire of creation. Time is born with the universe and dies with it. We exist and unexist within forever.
Then will forever stop when the universe does?
You are what you are because of what you cannot see. We are the same.
Why can the sergeant see you and I cannot?
By your viewpoint, line of sight, more unexist than exist.
Dr. Dalal, turn on Ms. Golding's ODA.
The screen split in two. On the new half, resolving quickly, sat Lars Seldon. And aside him, floating mere inches from the ground, was a pale, sickly, winged Vorn. Harry swore under his breath. This new apparition stared straight into Nina's eyes, its face weathered and tired-looking, especially next to the radiance of the other creature on the adjacent half of the screen. Through her eyes, its shade of gray was closer to ashy white, suffused with ragged whorls across its skin. The comtech scribbled frantically, attempting to accurately describe the unfolding scene to Brooklyn and Washington. Haley stood at last, wide-eyed and baffled.
Is this also the dream?
We understand that you cannot understand. Approximate designation of that which you describe is mate.
Harry's grip on certainty was slipping. If all this time his father had been carrying around Nina's mate...
Which of you speaks to us?
We speak. We are the dream.
You do not recognize discrete individuals?
We are many. We are the dream.
The queen, Harry thought. Not like Victoria, but like an anthill, a hive mind. His father's born would be their equivalent of a male, different than the wingless workers, its sole function being to procreate, which by the looks of it, would not be happening for much longer. Dr. Lily took a few steps towards Nina, meeting her unearthly gaze.
What can we do to help you?
What you must.
We don't understand. What must we do?
Uncertain. The window is near. It is not desirable to us.
The doctor nodded, in vague understanding.
We will speak again soon. Arshad, deactivate both ODAs.
Harry stepped forward, gingerly taking Nina's hand. Her alien eyes turned to regard him curiously. He gently guided her back towards the observation room. He knew she needed a break. Sitting her down on the couch, he closed the door between them, letting her collapse safely into the cushions. A frenzied grunting issued from the chair containing his father.
The dampener!
Lily interrupted his distracted pacing to reinsert the battery and replace the amulet, silencing the old sergeant. The main room was deathly quiet for a moment.
Points for thoroughness and craftsmanship, but this proves nothing. James, did your man Weiss get what he needed?
Lily pressed his fingers to his temples, cursing to himself. Despite what he had just seen, she was probably right.
That path through your neural net can't see much past its borders, can it? Everything is a conspiracy. Everyone willing to throw the world under the bus for their own craven desires.
Not everyone, but you, without a doubt.
Waylon, unless this harpy has anything useful to add in our endeavor here, I think we are better off proceeding without her.
We certainly wouldn't want the devil's advocate to get in the way now, would we? That might take you off schedule.
Gabriella, stand by. Mute Washington.
The comtech raced over and silenced the audio feed to and from Neidhart.
James, she's right. You're the reason Weiss is in power, and he's allied with the Disciples. You've had both of these subjects in your lab for a long time, letting the VEF grab them and ship them out here with your little broadcast device to trap me in a corner put you in a position to make this a coming-out party for the Vorn Queen. Tell me I'm wrong.
Waylon, something is happening. We have a security problem.
James Barrett fought to stay upright against the wall, one hand failing miserably to contain the bleeding from a gunshot wound on his right abdomen. His eyes watched in bewildered amazement as the frantic, wiry form of Foch approached the desk, his weapon leveled at the doctor.
Dr. Lilly, this man does not speak for Brooklyn, nor for science or for any religion other than his own power.
Barrett stumbled forward, releasing his hold on the wound in an attempt to shut off the transmission.
Imprisoned in this building are American victims of Dr. Barrett's experiments. He would have you believe that even though Wired can see the Vorn. Dr. Lilly, he has contaminated your search for truth.
Idiot! You know nothing!
A small pistol in the doctor's right hand flashed. Foch's eyes went wide, and a blossoming oval of blood soaked the center of his white shirt. He stared in shock at the tiny weapon as Barrett dropped it with a metallic clatter. Both men slumped to the floor while a commotion rose from the door of the office. Eugene Foch, of the Brooklyn Defense Force, was out of time. With one last effort, he raised his gun, aiming it squarely at the head of Brooklyn's most powerful man.
A pity. You won't be around to watch your failure unfold.
The light of his consciousness fading, Foch pulled the trigger. Barrett's head snapped back, and he was still. Foch heard voices swirl around him, but he could not make them out. It seemed as if someone had set him up, but he could not see them.
Dr. Lilly, I must speak today. Tell her we are prepared to help in any way possible.
Carabelli's entreaties lost their edges and blended into a background hum, which faded into nothingness as Foch let the darkness take him.
You've been listening to the Naive Theater of the Air performance of Rewired, featuring Ed Rogers as Dr. Waylon Lilly, Petra Wright as Dr. Gabriella Neithart, Derek Davis as Dr. James Barrett, Reed Perry as Lars, Levi Ray as Harry, Lara Hickman as the Vorn Queen, Dan Herman as Eugene Foch, and Aidan Wright as Speaker Adam Caravelli. Written and narrated by Matthew Broyles. Theme music by Paul Shapira. I'm Little Jack Melody. Tune in next time for episode 25, The End of the World.